Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick Campbell, Senior Editor of Practical Cardiology, and I'll be your host for this episode of Inside Cardiology. In this episode, you'll get to check out an interview I had with Dr. Stephen Green of the Duke Clinical Research Institute. In our interview, Dr. Green and I discuss a study he recently led that was published in JAMA examining the use of patient-reported outcomes versus NYHA class for capturing data on disease progression among patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. In the study, Green and colleagues used data from the CHAMP-HF registry to examine more than 2,000 HFrEF patients and found that use of KCCQ-OS was more accurate at capturing changes in disease state among these patients than NYHA class. For more on that study, what the results mean, and how they could impact clinical practice moving forward, here's my conversation with Dr. Green. What do you think the biggest takeaway should be from clinicians? Is it that the NYHA class is sort of an outdated way of looking at this, or is it that we need more ways to capture data related to disease progression?
Yeah, excellent question. So I think the key take-home point is that patient-reported outcomes have key advantages compared to the status quo for measuring health status, which is the clinician-assigned NYHA class. As you mentioned, the NYHA class has actually been around for almost exactly 100 years since it was first proposed as a functional class assessment for heart failure. And since that time, it's been ingrained in medical school curricula when we're learning about heart failure, but also more than that, pretty much every large clinical outcome trial has NYHA class within eligibility for that trial. And then when you look at the heart failure guidelines, trying to figure out whether a certain guideline applies to a patient or not, a lot of the time it's based on the NYHA class. So it's been ingrained in us as like a foundational nomenclature for monitoring health status. But since over the last couple decades, and even more recently, we've really developed validated patient-reported outcomes as an alternative for measuring health status and heart failure. Yet we've never really, although we inherently think of the value of these patient-reported outcomes, they're directly getting feedback from the patient. We've actually never in U.S. clinical practice directly compared, the status quo, the clinician-assigned NYHA class, versus what the patients are actually reporting themselves. So that was the opportunity with CHAMP-HF in this analysis.
All right, thank you for that. And now I think it sort of, you alluded to it there, a lot of times we don't look at it from sort of the patient reported outcomes perspectives. And I know recently, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, there's been a lot of talk about how clinical trials should be conducted and sort of the way that we should view events. Do you think that this could impact the way that we look at clinical trials in the heart failure space moving forward as we learn more about how accurately these patient-reported outcomes can detect changes in disease progression, and a caveat to that, as well as looking at guidelines moving forward?
I do. So thinking about this in a few different ways. So from an endpoint perspective, a lot of clinical trials already do include things like KCCQ as usually a secondary endpoint in these clinical trials to complement the effects on heart clinical outcomes. But I think, what your question also gets at is, what about the eligibility criteria? Where I was just mentioning that NYHA class is often used as an eligibility criteria. I think this study, indirectly supports the value of things like KCCQ potentially within the eligibility criteria for clinical trials to include patients where truly their health status is, if you're looking for a very poor health status, is defined as poor by what the patients are reporting themselves, not by what the clinicians are necessarily reporting. Again, this study, I think, suggests that compared to the NYHA, the KCCQ is a more reliable and likely actionable measurement of health status, again, compared to the status quo clinician-assigned NYHA.
And now, moving forward, what do you think this means for the NYHA class? I believe the last time we saw an update to the criteria, according to my research, was 1994. And now, if it's almost 100 years old, we've seen it updated before. Do you think we could expect to see it updated moving forward? Or will the sort of method around this be to incorporate KCCQ score and other patient-reported outcomes a little bit more frequently?
Yeah, well, in terms of the future of the NYHA, you know, it's hard to say. You know, it's still, the bottom line is it was used in those foundational clinical trials. So if you're a purist, you know, that's what was measured to determine eligibility. But I will say that I think the emphasis on it, this is just my pure opinion, I think is going to decrease over time, whereas I think the emphasis on patient-reported outcomes in the KCCQ is only going to increase over time. You know, the ACC, AHA just published their performance and quality measures for heart failure care, and notably, measurement of patient-reported outcomes, both in the inpatient and outpatient setting, were new additions to that document. So that is only going to put, I think, more emphasis on patient-reported outcomes. Also notably, the HFSA just had a document that was published a few months ago on the on recommendations for building a heart failure clinic. And included in that document were also expert recommendations to include patient-reported outcomes in the outpatient heart failure clinic experience for patients.
All right, and looking at this study now, one of the things that people will touch on when they talk about sort of KCCQ and patient-reported outcomes is the effort and the time that would go in a clinical setting into collecting all of this from, let's say, your center with thousands of heart failure patients. What, other than just this simple implementation of these, what other barriers stand in the way of sort of realizing the prognostic value of these patient-reported outcomes?
Yeah, no, you kind of get at a key central point here, and that's, you know, sure, it's great that we show that something's valuable, but, you know, what's the status of its use in real-world practice? And, you know, again, while it is a new quality measure, relatively few centers are incorporating patient-reported outcomes into their routine outpatient heart failure practice. And I think there's a lot of barriers potentially that need to be overcome to improve this. You know, one, as you mentioned, is just familiarity with it and interpretation, just making sure clinicians are comfortable, you know, understanding what it means and what actions might correspond with a certain score. But also just the logistics of it is, you know, how are you going to get patients to answer the survey? How are you going to get the score calculated in an automated way? How are you going to get this in front of the clinicians without them having to dig in the electronic health record for it? But, you know, while those are all, you know, challenges, certain centers have been able to accomplish this. And I think the key is going to be doing electronic formats and kind of automated scoring. And with that, for example, there was a publication out of the University of Utah that showed that, you know, again, the patients can complete this in less than 7 minutes, and then you can have it really be a an automated part of the patient visit.
All right. And now just sort of staying on the patient visit and the real world applicability of this knowledge, how much insight do you think patient-reported outcomes can provide that an NYHA class assessment would not?
Well, I think clearly we show that it's much more sensitive to change over time. And that's what we're looking for with, you know, following patients in serial outpatient visits. You know, and it just goes to show that our clinician assessment by the NYHA, again, perhaps the phrase is clinical inertia is applying here. You know, we already have seen other examples in outpatient heart failure practice that there's very few medication changes. Here we show there's very few changes in the NYHA. So things that, again, are more driven by potentially clinician action, we see, again, this level of inertia. Yet at the same time, the patients are reporting sometimes very large changes in their health status over time. And those changes are validated because they actually correlated with the clinical outcomes. On the flip side, we have what changes were reported by clinicians actually didn't correlate with clinical outcomes when you're looking at the NYHA class here. So again, just goes to show the value of the patients are reporting many changes in health status that are seemingly flying under the radar if you're solely relying on NYHA class. And yet we have to take those changes in health status seriously when patients report them, because those were the ones that were associated with death and heart failure hospitalization. You know, humbly, not the changes that the clinicians were reporting with NYHA class.
All right, thank you for that. And now, as we look at your study as a whole again, Are there any specific limitations? Obviously, CHAMP-HF is a single registry, but incredibly robust data from CHAMP-HF. Are there any other limitations of this study that you would caution clinicians to consider before sort of running with the results?
Yeah, like all studies, there were limitations. I think, CHAMP-HF, first and foremost, was a voluntary registry. So while we have no reason to necessarily believe that it wouldn't be representative of U.S. clinical practice, technically all the sites and the patients that participate in this registry were volunteers. The other thing that I'll note is that the inherent way that we had to structure this analysis was patients with complete NYHA and KCQ data over a year of follow-up. So by definition, if we had to have data over a year of follow-up, we excluded patients who died during that year. So all patients had to be alive for this first year of the study. And over time, we did see, especially with KCQ, that KCQ tended to increase over time. And I think this must be interpreted in the context of potentially sicker patients dropping out of this cohort because of death. So again, just because we saw that on average, health status seemed to improve over time, I think that should not be interpreted as that, heart failure as a whole is an improving disease over time. Usually it's progressive, but in this, the way it was structured, health status did improve over time in this cohort over that 1 year.
Now, are there any other patient-reported outcomes you think should be considered by cardiologists to incorporate into their practice?
I think the KCQ has the most data behind it as a heart failure disease-specific patient-reported outcome. I think it's been the most well-studied. Another notable heart failure disease-specific patient-reported outcome is the Minnesota Living with Heart Failure Questionnaire. So I think those two really stand apart in terms of, again, most commonly used in clinical trials and the most experience with them. There are other patient-reported outcomes available. Some are disease-specific and others are not disease-specific for heart failure, but just essentially overall health status related. But I think, if we're trying to prioritize, where to put our focus for patient-reported outcomes, I think the KCQ is a good place to start.
All right, and now, are there any other steps or future studies planned from the Duke Clinical Research Institute or otherwise that you may be a part of further examining this issue or continuing in this topic?
Well, it's a good question, and I think we're going to be looking for ways to improve the utilization of patient-reported outcomes. Again, I think this study kind of shows the value from both a patient-centered and a prognostic standpoint. But I think next steps will also include figuring out if we can use patient-reported outcomes to actually improve quality of medical therapy, improve implementation of medical therapies. On one hand, we can argue that patients that are eligible for therapy should always be getting the maximally tolerated or target doses of guideline-directed medical therapies. But unfortunately, we know that's not the case in clinical practice. So a key question will be, if we incorporate patient-reported outcomes into outpatient clinic visits, can we use that as a nudge, essentially, to stimulate prescriptions of these guideline-directed medical therapies to improve implementation in that quality of care? I think that's one area of research that can potentially be explored in the future.
All right, that was about it, all my questions. Was there anything else you wanted to add about this study or the topic in general before I let you go?
No, well, it was really, I appreciate the opportunity. It's really a pleasure to speak with you today. But again, I'll just say that I think this is a really novel study taking advantage of a unique database that had longitudinal capture of both the NYHA and the KCQ for the same set of patients. We saw that there was significant discordance between what the patients are reporting over time and what the clinicians are assessing over time. So again, I think just begs the question of why aren't we incorporating patient-reported outcomes into our routine practice, and hopefully the future will include increased use of these for our patients.
Thank you again to Dr. Green for lending his time and expertise for this episode. For the latest in cardiovascular care and clinically impactful news in the cardiology space, be sure to head to practicalcardiology.com and subscribe to our free e-newsletter. Thank you for listening.